on Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, beyond, beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, wherever you are. I hope that one applies. It's May Day.
May Day, May Day.
Let's see if we can get some help from the higher dimension. Actually, we've had some good higher dimensional help today. And, if you're a worker, well, celebrate the Workers' Day. We all work somehow. Sometimes people are work. Sometimes people are pieces of work. Anyhow, this is, Ever Beyond, and as I said, it's Sunday, part of the Alternative Sunday service here on Wolf Spirit Radio. We are a subscriber-supported station, he said slowly. And it's only $5 for a month of subscription, and then we don't, you know, make you pay for it again. You can just pay $5 and you get a month to download as much as you want. I mean, it's really generous. It's barely nominal. So thank you very much for subscribing and keeping the station running and helping with the running costs. And part of the running costs is, for instance, to replace worn out mixing desks. And that was what I've just recently installed as a replacement mixing desk. So thank you for everybody who has sent in donations, both personal and to the station, because they make the station sound a lot better. You know, if I'm moving this thing and it's going crackle, 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 it's not going to sound good, is it? So, it doesn't make your ears feel happy. I want everybody to have happy ears. And so today, segueing it at the same time, that's segueing. we are joined today by Linda McCallum. And you'll remember Linda as the very nice smiley lady who was hosting the show in Yell'ham in Northern California. Is it in Oregon?
Washington.
Washington.
It's Washington State. Yeah.
Sorry. And I'm going to dust off the little platform here, the clear, take my rubbish off the lectern. You can step up anytime. We have if you're too tall, we'll take the little platform away. But if you're not, you can step up on the platform. And Linda, how are you doing today?
I'm just great. I'm looking forward to our adventure together and having an opportunity to share with so many people.
Cool. It's a journey. When we start moving energy. You've got a group, okay? So you're connected with a whole group of meditators that you've been meditating for a long time, would you say?
I wouldn't say that we're a whole group of meditators. I'd say we are a whole group of active, conscious, committed evolvers. I had never said that before, but the idea is to evolve consciousness in many different ways, and learning to focus, or what you might call meditation, is one way. Another is learning all the different facets of how we are influenced to form our consciousness, and then a series of disciplines to show us the capacity we have to overcome and change what we believe are the barriers or the limitations of our mind. So the school that I've gone to, Ramp the School of Enlightenment, I've gone for 30 years. And I never would have imagined that I would have gone as long, except that the knowledge is so captivating, as is the discovery of what we're capable of once we know ourselves as creators, instead of beings who are predominantly man, woman realized, or that way, as opposed to the body, mind, as opposed to the spirit. When we realize we are God, woman realized, God, man realized, that we come from a source that is giving us the power to be anything, then what demonstrates is very exciting. And so that's one of the reasons why I've studied here so long and have enjoyed applying it in my life.
So you're talking about mainly going beyond the limitations that we assign as one pole or another, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that because you're a man. You can't do that because you're a woman. You can't do this.
Exactly.
You can't, you can't, you can't. You can't do that because you're a girl. No, but you're a girl.
Well, when I was growing up, one of the first things I was told is that I couldn't know about people if I hadn't met them. Or if I just met them, I couldn't know whether they were someone I wanted to be with or not. And later in my life, I became quite intellectual, and it took me a long time to drop those programs, and an overview of religion as well, which was a strong influence in my life, and to begin to reformulate the definition of what God is, what source is. And I was born an Orthodox Jew, and the rules and regulations and laws were very, very strong. And the fear I had of God, that would punish me if I didn't do everything right. I mean, I remember trying to remember when I was 5 years old, all the times I had hated my little brother because I was afraid God was going to write it in his book. And if I didn't remember it, I wouldn't be forgiven. So when you start out with a very strong religious, programming, imprinting, and I believe in past lives, and I think many, many people have had strong religious imprinting, to be able to come to a place where you are knowing that God lives within you, that the source of all creation is you and is giving form and shape and life to all of life, and that we are interconnected. And the thing that is the glue, or the quality that brings us together, is love. And the understanding that we are creators, and that we as individuals, I kind of refer to it as the Mego. The Mego and the unlimited source are all one, except the one that is Linda is like a localized version of the non-local infinite source. And so I am a creation, and knowing I'm a creation, if my flaw is taking me to suffering, then I have the opportunity to go to the source and find ways to heal this belief system that made suffering the resource, or the only way I could imagine truth to be.
Well, it's also part of the, as it were, mission that, we all come to soak up a little bit of what it's like to be a human.
Exactly.
And we get, born into these, terrible families. So we know what humans are really like, or what it can be really be like. You know, how do we know? How can anyone from another planet know what it's like to be on the surface of this thing? Why humans aren't evolving, haven't been evolving properly over the last six or seven cycles of destruction and civilization, and how they're able to, how we're able to now see what the problem is. We didn't know what the problem was before. Now we know what the problem is.
You know, I have a couple of thoughts on that, JP. Number one, just to clarify, I think having the experience of being a human is extraordinary. But it is not who I am. It's what I'm embodying to have the experience on earth. that gives me the ability to utilize my senses, to take ignorance and bring it to wisdom and return that to my spirit as the uniqueness of my experience. It's only when we define ourselves as the truth of who we are by that embodiment, just the body, that the contrast and the polarization is painful and brings us to the swings of success and failure, worthy, unworthy. One of the ways I describe it is to say that whatever you are doing, whatever's been done to you, whatever belief you had of having a difficult childhood or a beautiful one, that's what you're learning. That's the blueprint you came in with, genetics and modeling and culture. And whatever you brought into this life, that is your learning experience. And that is a creation. That's not who you are in terms of value. Your value is never on the line. Nothing you could ever do, nothing that's ever been done to you could ever take from you your value. That's divine. So that was one thing. The other thing, just in a comment about what you've just said, is to get to a place where we really know that love is greater than suffering and is a resource to recreate, to uncreate and recreate, to do the miraculous, to forgive and forgive and forgive and forgive and forgive. And in that forgiving, we realize we don't have to carry karma anymore. We don't have to continue the blame and the pain. We can move on. My teacher Ramtha said something that I adore, and that is forgive, release, and allow. And those three words have been very impactful to me, forgive, release, and allow. Because if I can forgive what I believe someone should not have done or did to me and release them to go and be who they are, I am also free. I'm free to release myself and to go on and to choose something else. And I think that's where we have to be able to learn how to let go of blame. Because blame is the trap. That's the place where subject and object become so strong, where you're separate from me. And because of what you did, you have to pay, or you have to know, or you failed me. And it took me a really long time in my life to know that some of the betrayals I had in my life were because I betrayed myself. And I didn't know how to speak my truth because I was afraid of hurting another. I was afraid that I would bring a lack of honor to friendship or commitment or my husband. So I had to really learn that when I could trust myself to speak truth and to love who I was, then I could be very clear in relationships and they didn't harbor the stories that keep replicating the suffering.
Absolutely. You know, I think about this sometimes when somebody says, oh, you did this terrible thing to me one day and all this stuff, and you were this and you were that, and I felt this about you all these years, and like, oh yeah, I remember that day. I was actually having quite a nice time, you know. Oh, well, really, you know, and I've carried this all these years. You see, that's what forgiveness is about, is actually letting go of all this crap because it doesn't exist.
There's a wonderful story.
It's just a program.
There's a wonderful story of the two Buddhists who had come to, one was a younger one and the other was an older. And a woman was by the edge of the riverbank and she said, could you possibly carry me across? It's too deep for me and I feel like I'll drown. I don't know how to swim. So one of the Buddhists put her on his shoulder and he started taking her across and he said, you know, if you had planned better, you wouldn't be here. And you should know this is way too deep for you. And he gets her to the other side and he says, I hope you have learned your lesson that this is not the path. And the woman looks and she said, you've crossed the river with me, but you never put me down. And I think that that's what happens. We go through a story. We go through an experience with someone, and we don't realize how we link our feelings to other stories. Brené Brown, a brilliant sociologist, uses a wonderful example. In her studies with people and research with people, she found that the very moment you have a feeling of hurt or blame or fear or whatever, within that moment you have stories. The brain just produces stories.
Yes.
And then in that split second, the chemistry matches the story. So now you've got the stories historically and the chemistry. And as you look out in your perception, it seems that that's everywhere. And to understand that every single moment has a choice point, every moment we could decide not to link it to the story. We could learn that act of presence and be here now to choose how we want to relate. What do we want to say about that? And to me, one of the ways that's really strong is to recognize that whatever anybody does, I still have choice. And my choice is not to force them to be what I had hoped they might be, but to be clear that my resources are unlimited. And the more that people can begin that journey, and you know, I say that with great love and humility in the sense that this is a journey. This is not something, you know, oh well, you know, you just get it and there you are. This is a practice. I love the understanding and that the martial arts kung fu is actually practice. That's what that word means, kung fu, practice. We are practice. And the more we practice, the more we hardwire the new attitude, the new way of responding. There's been tremendous work physiologically to help people understand that you can rewire. Because we're only using a very small percentage of our brain. I mean, we all learn that in school. And yet the brain is still there and the neural nets are there. We're just not occupying them. But there is technology now where we can learn how to grow neurons to different parts of the brain and learn how to rewire so we actually see ourselves and know ourselves as being able to do things we never have done before.
Yep, create new pathways, both in the world and in the mental world and in the brain itself.
Exactly.
So, oh wow, you came across so many subjects there, and there was one that I particularly wanted to explore. And yes, that's right. The idea, and you said it really quickly, and it's the key to a lot of problems, is the idea that we have everything that we need. Because the idea of not having enough then leads into the you've got more than me. And then that also is the whiny why. and then the angry, well, because of that. And blame, and you know, the whole seesaw goes. So by, instilling the idea that you have always enough, you don't need to hoard, you don't need to, plan ahead. It just falls into your hand if you're in tune. Just being in tune though. That's the tricky bit.
Yes. Yes. And to retrain yourself to have methods, ways, techniques, whether it's meditation or mindfulness or nature. I find nature to be one of the greatest gifts. One thing about nature is it never judges you. You can walk among the trees and breathe the air and you feel peace and you feel release. To find what way works for you. To be able to connect to your heart. You see, one of the things that I learned that was so stunning to me, really stunning, because I've worked for 40 years doing my work with people and offering, whatever I do, is I have seen incredible abuse and I have seen betrayal. I have seen terrible things that have happened to people. But what I have discovered is that the love that exists within their heart, the innocence that lives in their heart, is not hurt. It is not. But what has happened is all of these experiences have layered over the heart, and the belief systems and the stories and the inability to trust and the expectation and prophesizing of more pain and more pain and then finding it again and being a prophet again. This pattern is what has to be addressed. But when it is addressed, what is discovered is that this innocence, this love that lives within you is pure and beautiful and not harmed. And I know that many people who have suffered terribly believe that they're scarred for life. And yet, they don't have to be. And I know that some people don't believe in past lives and reincarnation, and some people don't believe in karma, and I respect anybody's belief, however that works for them, that they have the right to do that. But from my perspective, there is a pattern of how you perceive reality, whether it's caused and imprinted from your genetics, from the modeling that happened during the first 6 years of your life, through certain traumas that may have happened. This patterning is how you perceive your reality. We're bombarded with millions of bits of information, and we take just a tiny bit in because that's what we recognize as reality. Learning how to expand that and to recognize that somewhere inside of us is love that has never left us. And this is not a new age, blah, blah concept. This is truth. This is how miracles happen for people. This is how out of the blue something wonderful happens, because they had allowed the door of their heart to open. I'm going to give you an example. It's a process that I have recently been introduced to, and I won't take the audience through it, but I will describe. All right. I've never done this way before, but as you said, you like ever to live beyond. On the fly. Ever beyond. Okay. This is something I just learned through a wonderful person named Todd Weldon. And he was able to show it to me, and then I began working with it and made some subtle adjustments for me as it worked for me. But this is what I would share. Take a moment and go into something that is causing you pain, something that is really difficult, and allow yourself to completely feel it. Now I would like you to disconnect slightly and become aware of the feeling. In the moment of awareness, you are not the whole of the feeling. You are aware of it, like a witness, like an observer. And now I would like you to give this feeling a shape and a color. Whatever shape comes to mind, whatever color comes. Now I would like you to look in your body, in your mind. Tell me where this shape is. Where is it in your body? Where is it in your mind? Where is it located? If it's in your solar plexus, in your heart, your throat, your first seal, your genitals, where is it? Right now, I would like you to disconnect from that place and move into your heart. Just move into this feeling of being in your heart. One of the things you'll realize or recognize is there's no thinking here. There's just a welcoming expansion, a spaciousness. Allow yourself to just relax into the spaciousness, into this love that is welcoming you, always ready to welcome you. And as you surrender into that, it expands. And what seem to have borders now expands more and more. And now I would like you to go get your shape and your object and bring it into your heart. And you feel how welcomed it is, how loved. This is a creation. This is something you created. Always loved. Always loved. And as the love embraces the shape, you find it somehow seems smaller in the vast sea of spacious love that you're experiencing. So pure. Like a little knot in a vibrating web of love. And as you allow yourself to be with this shape and in this love, you realize that some of the edges seem to be softening. It seems to be less intense. Smaller, melting. Just allow yourself to be there for a moment with this. And now, take what is left of the object, bring it back to your mind, and allow yourself to feel what you were feeling, and see if it's different now. Less threatening, less intense, for it's been bathed in love. How is your experience?
Our magic time machine brings us back into the here and now.
Hmm.
Well, that was quite interesting. Personally, I mean, obviously I can only speak of my experience because that was what I was doing. I kind of went into it and, what it felt like actually, it felt like a sword that had been stuck, from like above my shoulder. Mm-hmm. Right down mm-hmm. into my heart, right? Mm-hmm. really mm-hmm. deep. And when I brought it into my heart space, it first of all turned, you know, from a sword into a dagger. And then as it hit the ground, it just melted. I mean, this is long before you said it would get softened and melt and everything. It's just like bam, 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 bam. Mm. I'm sorry. And then it became a sort of, cartoon, like rubber duck, kind of little, like a toy rubber duck sort of, and making this funny kind of sound. Like a crazy little, just the madness. That I then brought back into myself and kind of again remelted and reabsorbed and anyway, so that was very interesting. Now in my healing techniques, that this is, you know, we take a similar approach. There are other ways. I mean, by taking the approach of putting a shape and a color or a texture or something onto the feeling by using one or more of the feelings, the sensorium. When we do that, that allows the person to really hook into that. And there's so much you can do with that. I mean, that is like a whole, a zip file of information that can be. I need to deal with that kettle. I'm very sorry. That's why that whistling sound in the background is I have an old fashioned stove with,
Perfect timing. Yeah. It was absolutely perfect timing. I just wanted to say what pleases me about this exercise. I've certainly never done it this way. So, I've only done it one-on-one, but what really pleases me is that anyone can do this themselves. You don't need me to do this. You can take this and you can practice this. And you can begin to realize that love is in you. That is the softening. That did melt the dagger. That did take the sword and turn it into a dagger and then took it all the way so that you could laugh or smile. In this opportunity to be able to have a very simple exercise to assist you in realizing your own resource that you'd kind of forgotten because there's been so much hurt or there's been so much pain or suffering and it feels to you that that's just the way life is. No, that's the habit. That's the belief system. That's the pattern. So that's one of the reasons why I delight in finding any kind of exercise and that could help people to understand what's possible. In the school that I've gone to, people have healed illness and people have accomplished great miracles. I have also. It is marvelous what is available, but the courage to walk out of the stories, the courage to forgive those that you want to pay for the pain they've caused, to forgive those who you believe took away your value, is to free yourself. And it takes courage because there's a period that you go through where you don't really even know who you are. You're not sure. You feel like you don't even know your name. I mean, you don't know what your opinions are. There's a place of, it's like, you know, the saying that nature abhors a vacuum. Well, you enter into a vacuum for a period. You find you just don't have the same desires, predilections. So holding the desire to know this place of love, to know that your value was never taken from you, that love was always there for you. This, however that can come, whatever works for the individual, I support it with all my heart because I know it's the truth. We are not what we think. The fragility of what we have and the statistics that tell us what is possible, how we should be. I'm 72 and I feel my life is beginning. I am joyful and youthful because that's what I know. But I see other people who say, well, the best is over and I just am kind of doing the best I can with the end of my life. And I go, no, you don't have to. I mean, you can if you want, but boy, you sure don't have to. Because once you start reaching for joy and for the possibility of creation, you know, knowing ourselves as creators is key, absolutely key. We are instinctively creators. We can create anything, miracles. We can create a whole new way of expressing ourselves. But we have to be willing to walk out of the familiar story and sometimes the familiar relationships, sometimes the family, everything. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just finally you forgive everybody and they think you had a miracle healing and you're the greatest thing that ever lived.
Well, it's lovely when it happens. I'm just quizzing the chat room here. Ray Rose says, yeah, she's good.
Well, that's nice. Thanks.
Old one says, she is wow. She says, Ray says, you sound 21.
Sweet. Thank you.
Vanessa says,
I feel that.
Well, I mean, I have to say, you know, I've seen you on camera and, you know, you wouldn't look very vastly different from my age group, even though I'm kind of old and bald looking. I was like this. I've been like this since I was 24.
And your personality is still that, just a little wiser.
Yeah. Well, no. No, I intend to be as reckless as I was when I was 24. That's what got me into the whole spiritual thing, really. Actually, I was on riding a motorbike and bam. That kind of woke me up. There you go. That was my story. That was 30 years ago. So, I'm just having a quick look there to, Lyra's saying she felt elevated out of mind patterns. There we go. So there we go. Old one says, always look 48, lol. Anyway.
you said something to me when we first, kind of found each other, which was like a week ago. Mm-hmm. It was so quick. But you said, you asked me a little about myself and, on my website, one of the videos there is the story of my life and, only a part of it, but to show as a woman how I came into an honor of self instead of a fear of not honoring others. But I told you that I had, been well known as an astrologer, then gave that up and then, went through a process of moving and changing in so many ways and then wound up being in a business and an entrepreneur and lost all my money. And you started laughing and you said, oh, I could have told you that. You're an initiate. And
yeah, that's right.
I got such a kick out of that because every initiate that I know, and I know a few good ones, you get in an accident or you lose your money or your family breaks up, something. And the idea of having to reform, remake yourself, make a choice, who are you, is thrust upon you. And if you're fortunate, which I certainly am, and you appear to be very fortunate, you go for it. And you find the wonder of what is possible.
After a while, you get to realize.
That's so true.
You know, because you think, oh, I'm going to be all spiritual. I'm going to walk around in robes and hold things.
Oh, that was never my desire.
I have things on my head and all that stuff.
No.
Most of the time is spent like cowering in a hole in a darkened room. Please leave me alone while I relive this trauma. That's most of what the spiritual enlightenment really consists of is unprogramming yourself from all this terror.
That's true. But I also think my personal belief is that you have an opportunity to use your will, develop your will again. You had said something earlier and I was going to go to it and then I got distracted. But one of the reasons why that people haven't been able to evolve the way we had hoped is so much of our power has been methodically taken from us in so many ways. And through guilt, through shame, through fear, constant programming of fear, whether you're talking about frequency bombardment, whether you're talking about the programs of taking the magnificence of a divine woman and turning her into a prostitute in ways that her only purpose is satisfying her husband and having children and continuing the name, and the way men have to cover their hearts. I mean, men who are male and female, just as women are female and male, have had to shut down their sensitivity, their compassion, because they have to insist that their woman be a certain way. So much of this has happened over prolonged periods of time. Some of it has been from the distortions of religion politically. Some of it has been done from political greed. Some of it has been done because somewhere along the line, we were not told we were creators. And now is the time. Now is the time that those who have been through fire can say, hey, look, yeah, it sucked. It was really, really hard from a human point of view. And yet what is possible is a sense that you can be free, that what somebody else decides is your possibility. You can say, I don't think so. That's not true for me. And you make your own path because the quantum field is waiting for you to observe a reality that you're choosing. That's what happens. But it takes your will. It takes a heart that is realigned and the love that lives in you as you gives you another choice. But this is really important. I'm on a roll now. I can feel it. My energy
rolling,
is like. but this is really important. And that is, we have to face our illusions about time. I mean, you know, it's like planting a seed in the ground that's an apple tree and you're really pissed off in 6 months because you don't have any fruit. There are things that take time. It takes time to rewire a body. It takes time for you to practice your ability to overcome the programming that not only is the victimization on television or reality life and believing this is how it is and how it has to work, and you're not a player and you're not somebody who can make magic. Every single person is the same value. Every single person. But every single person has different learning. And if you believe that your learning is who you are, suffering is pretty much guaranteed. Pretty much. But if you can get to a place where you truly understand that the source you have that is the same source that every person has, that is the same source that gives form and shape to all that you perceive, is always present. Always. And is there when you call it forth. And if you can let go of time, because time shapes to the mind, and let yourself know this is a law. What you command is the truth. All right, I'm going to tell you a story. When I went through my business difficulties with my company, and we had just gone bankrupt and my mortgage was due and it was $3,000 and I was panicked because although the business was still on as a possibility of still functioning, there was no place to go. Certainly a bank wasn't going to give me money, and every friend had either invested in the business or was really done. So it was a really scary time for me. And I made a card, a 3x5 blank card, and on the card I had a stick figure of me. I have curly hair, so it had big curly hair, and my fist was up in the air, and it said, I did it. This mortgage is paid. Yes! And that was my card. And every day, I woke up in the morning, and I said over and over, this is the truth, this is what happened, I am so happy this happened. At night, before I went to sleep, I did that. After 8 days, I get a call from a company that works for Smith Barney, and they're finding people who Smith Barney can't get a hold of. And I had moved from LA up to Washington, and they did not know where I was with my new address. And my sister, my little sister, had died of cancer 10 years prior. And there was an IRA that she had that they were looking, they had found, and they were looking to give to me. I was the beneficiary of it. And it was for $3,100. What are the chances?
Well, when you look at, when you say what are the chances, what are the odds? You
know, yeah.
That's referring to the duality.
Exactly.
But when there isn't, it's like, yes.
Yes.
Thank you, God.
Yes.
For answering my prayer.
Yes. And that God is my Holy Spirit that's looking out my frontal lobe and saying, what is it that you are calling forth?
Exactly. Exactly. What does this situation need?
Yes.
How can I best, my personal mantra is, how can I best serve this moment?
Wonderful.
And I know that, you know, wherever I am, whoever I'm with, just to go back to a little bit further back, we were talking earlier about, you know, you get born into these families and, you know, it can be this and it can be that. Everybody gets their puzzle.
Yes.
In their childhood. And
yes.
Our lifetime journey is to gather the little pieces of the puzzle. And sometimes a trauma may send you in a particular direction. And
yes.
In that direction is a further enlightenment for everybody.
Yes.
That you discover as a result of the trauma that you've had. That is also actually the result of past life.
Yes.
Perhaps oppression that you may have yes. exerted on some other people.
Yes.
And you find eventually the cure for the reason that you were originally oppressive. How about
yes.
that?
Totally true. I see that, and this is all the more reason to know that whatever the behavior, whatever the limitation, whatever the pain, whatever the suffering, that's not who you are. That's what you're learning in this life. That's what you're hoping to finish in the soul. That's what you're hoping to go back to your God and be able to say, I've completed this. I no longer carry blame. I no longer carry shame. Coming back to Brené Brown one more time, she does a magnificent delineation or discernment between shame and guilt. Shame is when you feel you're missing something. Intrinsically, you didn't get this part that you need, like a heart filled with love, like an ability to create, like an ability to change. You didn't get that. And so you have this shame, and you go through your life expecting little or feeling you deserve to have whatever pain comes your way because you were missing something. And guilt is when you have done something and you know that that wasn't the right thing to do. And so you carry that guilt, and that guilt becomes embedded, and you find yourself having a residue of guilt that somehow, you know, you have to redeem yourself. I know for myself, because I wanted so much to know God in this life. I would do anything in this life to know God. I study Catholicism. I study Buddhism. I study Baha'i. And when I found my teacher, which is Rantha, when I found him, what he did was help me to understand that God was consciousness and energy, and that I was born of it, and that God's purpose was to make known the unknown, and I was this individualized expression, and I came from this source, and it wasn't a personality. It's not a personality. This is, like, a friend of mine wrote a book called The Hamburger Universe, you know, heaven above, the bun below, where's the beef? I mean, it's not that. This is the opportunity for us to understand that we come from this consciousness, this source for experience. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, if we've lived thousands of lifetimes, do you really think you were only the good life? You were everything. You've lived everywhere. You've been everywhere. You were everything. You've been the worst. You've been the best. But here's the key. In this life, this is the best life because you're conscious here. You're conscious, and you can take all those experiences and you can turn it into wisdom. You can be standing here now and you can say, I know what it is to be a tyrant. I know what it is to take advantage of others. I know what it is to harm innocence. I know what it is to feel that pain. I know what it is. I choose now to do things differently. Wow. I mean, that's like phenomenal. People who don't want to live because it's just too hard, I understand it can be really hard, but gosh, it's an opportunity for you to realize how powerful this source is within you. Are you still there? Did I lose you?
This, just fine. I'm just thinking, this is a good moment to bring Louis Armstrong. It's very interesting. He says, oh, yes.
I love that song. It's one of my very favorites, so I'm thrilled that you played it.
There you go. I'm so tuned in. Right, there you go. But it's interesting. I always thought he said, oh, yeah. But he says, no, oh, yes. It's very important.
Very.
Now, where were we? Did you have a pin in your mind? Did you pin it to the place? We were talking about
the gift of life and how wonderful it is to be able to make a new choice and to realize that the resource you have within you will help you if you can let go of time and just hold that this is the outcome. You know, I have a little thing I do. I travel to LA to see clients, and I like, because I go down for like 5 days, maybe six, and I like to see 11 people at least when I'm there, which is a busy time, but rewarding to me on many levels. And so sometimes when I'm booking the trip, maybe I only have 4 people or 5, but I take 11 CDs with me, and I see myself on the return flight. And I can tell by the look I see in my eyes that I had a great trip and that magic happened and it was very rewarding and I did more than 11. And you know, it has never been any other way. And I know that because I have acceptance that I can do this. It wasn't always that way that I had the acceptance that what I wanted to have happen would happen. And sometimes when it didn't happen, there was a greater opportunity for me. But it's very common once you begin to see the power you have to see the outcome, if you can release how it's going to unfold. Is that clear?
Absolutely. It's the locking in of the feeling, because you're triggering a frozen, essentially, you're triggering a frozen soul fragment that prevents you from moving through this process.
Yes.
And until you deal with the fragment, and the way I deal with the fragment is very similar. It's a very similar approach, as I was saying, to where you say, you know, you give it a shape, or you get that, you get to a feeling, because that form, that shape, that color is a symbol that
yes.
your soul fragment, your child fragment, the inner child fragment, however you want to call it, because it's the same thing on a fractal level anyway.
Yes.
How that communicates with you. And like for me, every disease is a conversation.
And, yes, that's exactly right.
And, so, you know, this is, people who listen to me, I hear me saying these things all the time. It sounds like I'm programmed for it. Anyway, but yeah, the idea that we're playing out these things so that we can be healed.
Yes.
That these little fragments, come round in the cycle of time and the cycle of the moon, usually, you know, once a month, you get this same feeling and it's a, you know, a continual trigger until you've finally realized and you connect up the feeling. And this is what these techniques do. They connect you with the feeling and the consciousness that is lost, because all that's left of the memory is the feeling. And it keeps trying to bubble up and poke through. And that's what we call disease, or this is what we call life events, in my humble.
Okay. So I'm going to make a discernment of what I've learned, in relationship to what you're saying. And that is, the discernment is between emotion and feeling. Emotion has a historical quality. We have emotions from traumas that we experienced, or pain that we went through, or joy that we've gone through. It has emotional imprint. Feeling is also an understandingly a part of emotion, but the feeling that lets you know, I am now feeling something I've never felt before. I am now sensing that this experience I want will, if I go this way, if I choose to do it that way, that I'm aligned with what I want to have happen. So this concept or definition of feeling has to do with what I haven't yet experienced, but I sense is aligned with what I choose as my outcome. Is that clear?
Yes, it's clear.
Well, we're on radio and I can't see your face.
Oh, just assume I'm listening. I'm definitely paying attention. I've got headphones on and I can hear nothing else but the sound of your voice right in the middle, right in, this is vibrating my amygdala. So don't worry, I'm here.
Now, I think that that's important, because so often our emotions are our histories. They're our stories. And our fear is very much linked to these patterns of emotion. So learning how to open ourselves to feel something we haven't felt before. Like, before I discovered that innocence in the heart existed and wasn't broken and wasn't ruined from betrayal and pain and suffering or whatever I felt I had gone through, this was so stunning. I never felt that. I never knew that that was real. So I was led to that experience through my quest to know my spirit. And I did some very wonderful work with a Dr. Terry Franks, who helped me to connect to the places that I had difficulty trusting in my heart. And that as I kept peeling away those layers and altering the change of who I was, who I'd always been, before I went through the process of distorting and contorting what the male was and what the female is. I mean, the agreements and contracts that men and women have made is very difficult to undo unless you're willing to recognize what your agreements are. Women, I work a lot with women, and women have patterns of believing that they must make their partner happy first. They must make their children happy first. They must make their best friends happy first, their parents happy first. And they often will in their mind say, well, it's not what I want, but I see how important it is to them, and I'll do it. It's okay. I can handle it. They can't seem to handle not having it, but I can handle it. And so a martyrdom becomes connected to love. And that is fed and empowered with religion and a belief that this is what love is. And often women get sick or go through depression or have breast cancer, things like that, because they didn't know how to bring themselves into the equation. They didn't know how to say, that doesn't work for me, or I don't really want to do that. They didn't know how to love themselves enough to allow someone they love to be who they were and be there for themselves. There's a saying that I like very much, which is, forgiveness is a decision, but trust is a construction. We have to rebuild trust when it's broken. And I find the trust that needs to be rebuilt the most is the self-trust. That we can trust ourselves to speak our truth, to recognize the frequency of what's in front of us, and to know that we stand with ourselves. And in that way, we become very much aware of a love within us, even if we have to lose some people along the way.
And that's the thing. What people are going to be affected by your healing? Who are you protecting? And I think one of the things, one of the traps that people fall into is that they justify all kinds of things because of a desire to protect something.
Yes, so true.
And this is, you know, it's always the big mistake that people made in their lives was to do this. And it might be to protect your grandmother's feelings, you know, because she didn't approve of the girlfriend that you had, you know.
Yeah.
And in the end, you know, when the whole play's over, you know, granny says, oh yeah, good on you for putting up with me. I was so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That is the big, when somebody's like really anxious, I always get the feeling that they're really desperately, and there's the word despair in there, trying to protect something. And often that thing doesn't really exist anyway.
Well, the complexity of that, JP, is that because the programming of what love looks like and what deserves to be loved is so intense for so many centuries, for women and for men. Men feel they must go out and earn the living and be responsible and take care of everything. And women believe they have to protect their husband and their family, and also often work and earn a living. And the programming is really strong, and the resentments that come up when you believe that you're doing this for some reward, you know, God is going to reward you. Your goodness is going to be recognized. And then maybe you find out your husband cheated on you. Or maybe you find out that your child is off in a really difficult direction. Or maybe you find that you're drawn to an affair or something like that that would ruin how people perceive you. The complexity of who you are based on this sacrifice, this concept of what goodness looks like, is not what I do to another, I do to myself. This is how I have to be in order to have value, and this is how I have to behave in order for my husband or family to be respected by the community and for us to be important and belong. My mother had cancer for 11 years, and she had lost a breast, a hysterectomy, a colostomy. She weighed 80 pounds when she died. And she said to me before she died, I must have done something very terrible to have suffered like this. And I said, Mom, whatever you've done, my God, look, you've given half your body. It's enough. Whatever it is, whatever you believe, it's enough. I said, let it go. Give it up. And she said, I can't. And I said, why? And she said, because I don't know what I did. And it was very impactful to me. My little sister died of cancer. My father died of cancer. The concept of believing that life should have been different based on the sacrifices, based on way things were supposed to be is very antiquated and painful with great suffering. So the time we're living in now with all the wonderful ways that people are coming to their understanding of wholeness versus separation, wholeness versus subject-object, I am grateful because I see this as the beginning of us waking up and realizing that we're all interconnected. We're all a part of some incredibly grand picture, and it's our time right now to be able to connect and realize that by choosing yourself, you're not caring for others, but you're actually allowing love to be born in you so that when you give to another, it's not conditional. It's not filled with attachments. It's not filled with expectations.
You know, the way I feel, it's like, you know, on the aeroplane, and they say, okay, if we're doing a nosedive, right, the thing you don't give the kids the oxygen first.
Yep.
You give yourself the oxygen, otherwise you're not going to be able to help the kids.
Yes.
And it's an analogous situation, I'd say. You know,
it is.
You have to, you know, take a deep breath and at least feed your brain.
Yes.
Before you go and help everybody to death.
Yes.
You know,
that's.
This is, and here's the thing. The old way is this way. The Piscean age way is to exert yourself, to sacrifice yourself.
Yes.
And the new way is like, oh, well, there's loads of people who want to do the same thing. So everybody does a little bit.
Yes.
It's easy for them. It makes everybody joyful, and nobody has to end up with those bloody eyebrows. You know the eyebrows that I'm talking about?
Yes.
In every group, there is usually some woman who, like, and she's got this dog, and the dog has this sad look on its face all the time as well. And she's the one, you know, after all the events, she's the one putting the tables and chairs away, doing the washing up, sweeping the place up, making sure the place is spick and span because everybody else left it. The diehard. I call this the diehard, and the eyebrows, the volunteerism eyebrows.
Yes.
And, you know, we don't need that anymore. We can all do a little bit towards it.
It's about coming
from the heart. Yeah.
Yes. It's a hard retraining though, because if that's what you've done to sacrifice yourself your whole life for that goodness, for that extending yourself, it's very difficult to give it up and think that I can take care of myself and I still would be loved. I still would be valued. And of course, the irony of it is you're really valued then because you're not making everybody else feel guilty that they're not doing what you're doing.
Exactly.
I think that's why contributism, has a voice. The idea that everybody can contribute something. But the most important thing is that you contribute to yourself. And that I used to think that people who were self-absorbed and only thought about themselves were totally unfeeling and insensitive and no compassion or empathy but I think I included way too many people because there were a lot of people who weren't that at all. They just didn't want to play that game of martyrdom. They didn't want to play that game that I'm going to give you everything you want, even though it's not at all what I want. And I had to learn to change that. And in that, I found that it was so much easier to love and allow other people, because I didn't need them to validate me. And of course, the hidden agenda with this other way is that the searching for, oh my goodness, what will we do without you?
Exactly. It's just like trying to be a messiah, and we don't need to be that either. We don't need to be everything for everybody. We just need to be ourselves for ourselves and ourselves for each other. Because, otherwise it doesn't work, does it? You remember, sorry.
Yes. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just remember when I was an astrologer, I was booked 6 months in advance, and my schedule was just like off the charts. And it was the end of a week, and my husband was away traveling, and I was so tired. I was sitting in front of the television as an eggplant, you know, a total vegetable. I just zoned. And a very dear friend called and said, oh my God, I'm so glad you answered the phone. My husband and I just had a horrible fight. I think I'm going to have to leave him, and I don't know what I would do. Can I come over? I said, I am so sorry, Bridget. I don't even know my name right now. I just can't. I'm so sorry that I can't be there for you. She said, oh, I'm glad you told me. I'll call Robert. He's really good with this. I'll talk to him.
There you
it was
go.
Such
really
a great thing.
So essential.
It was so great for me. It changed my life, you know, that belief that you are the only one that can take care of this. So you're the only one.
You are the one. I'm the one. I'm the one who always bloody has to do this. I'm the one who, I'm the one. So have you ever heard people say that? I'm the one. They always say, I'm the one who does this. I'm the one who that. There's always, and you always get that, you know, you always get that. So, being the one is great, but, it's good to be in a team. And
I agree.
That's, you know, we have community, and, we might like to be singular, you know, and a lot of, here's the thing. You understand the seven rays?
You know, you were the one that just talked to me a little bit about it.
I was the one again. There we go.
Yes, you are the one. And so I would love for you to talk a little bit about that, because I think that's fascinating. I know you said I was a four, a two, and a one, but it didn't mean anything to me. So so tell me about how that works.
Okay. So the here's the thing. The what we call the body of Christ, or we could say the collective consciousness of the initiates on this planet. This is the same thing. All the initiates are essentially students of the great master, the Christ, you know, not necessarily when he was incarnated as Jesus, but, you know, as all the others, you know, because he's just the one being. And those who recognize that and aren't connected personally to the whole affair are in this, like I said, pool of collected consciousness, which it's like, it doesn't exist on Earth. I mean, it's like you don't go to a place.
Right.
You may find yourself gathering in a sort of gravity well where there are other people who do the same sort of thing, such as Findhorn or Yell'ham or wherever. Or Glastonbury, or, you know, more and more little centers are popping up, like chakras and minor chakras. This is what the first ray is doing. For the first ray is the ray of truth. It's the, what David Icke calls the truth vibration. Yeah. And it's the same energy as, the will of God. Because the will of God is truth. You know, however you call God the, you know, the source creator, its action is the ray, is the first ray. And that corresponds with the note of C and the color of red and la da da da. And then, you also have, so that's the monad ray. Now, there are three, the monad is the triplicity, the three in one, the trinity, the higher self, the, you know, that entity, which is, which is you really, the who mm-hmm. you know, the avatar that lives, the person that lives in the avatar, the being,
yes.
is that. And that could be, and that is indeed a fragment of a much larger being.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we call our source, our higher self. That acts through, the soul, which is, again, it's a, because all things are collective intelligence and collective consciousness is, joined together. The soul is what we call the soul angel or the solar angel. It's the means through which the monad connects with the personality.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you get to the clarity of being able to be flexible to be any frequency in that, to tune into any soul frequency, mm-hmm. then you naturally gravitate towards the Ray 2 soul group.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Ray 1 and Ray 2 soul group, what I call the 1-2s, mm-hmm. are what they call the body of Christ. There's the collective initiate consciousness. And mm-hmm. so you recognize these people immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They'll the people who stand out in a room mm-hmm. or stand out, even if you're just like looking at a whole bunch of photographs, your eye will be drawn towards them. And you'll have a feeling
mm-hmm.
because you know them because they're you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another yourself.
I love that you said that. Go ahead. That you know them because they're you.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Go ahead.
So, you know, more than a brother or sister, you are the expression of the same energy that they're the expression of.
Yes.
Yeah. When you're in your higher self, you know, when you're in your right. personality, and then there's a personality self, right? And that's the, mm-hmm. that's the third number. Karmic things that we work through. And, generally if people are running on a fourth ray or a sixth ray, that's right.
Sorry, I'm choking.
I know. All right. So, take a breath and,
Because
stuff like that, you know, does tend to stick sometimes.
Go ahead.
So basically, yes, if you're carrying, ray four or ray six in places, mm-hmm. sometimes they're sub rays. I think what you, hang on, let me just check. Have you got four or six as the main ray? Four? Right. And a six sub ray. Right. Okay. So, there's a working out in your process of the ray of devotion. And this mm-hmm. is exactly the story that you've been telling me.
I know. It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is what's called the sixth ray sub ray that is working its way out. So mm-hmm. all the sixth ray is the sticky icky programming mm-hmm. that you're gradually spring cleaning mm-hmm. and updating and renewing to a point where it doesn't depend on anybody else.
Right.
It's just an internal pivot point. All right. Yeah, that's how I choose. Okay. Then you make a directional change that doesn't feel like you're turning a super tanker, mm-hmm. a 90 degree turn,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the sixth ray can be like that. It can be a total bulldozer steamroller thing. And mm-hmm. that's what you experienced as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this incredible pressure to conform mm-hmm. and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It did. It's fascinating.
So, and then also you've got your personality ray as ray four. And again, this is an incredibly keen and sensitive ray. And almost, it's almost like a punishment. It's like the princess and the pea. Like you end up, you know, your princess is like in no better position than anybody else because of her, noble status. She's necessarily, an empath.
Yeah.
Which, gives her the ability to, what they call noblesse oblige, which is to be in service to the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's truly being, you know, to be royal and noble, is you serve. You're not a tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been, so anyway, so with the fourth ray, I'll tell you that the ray four and ray one relationship is kind of like, the princess and the knight.
Mm-hmm.
The ray one is the knight, you know, it's, you know, mm-hmm. knights even have these long sticks and long mm-hmm. sticks, you know, long, thin things like the number one,
mm-hmm.
And towers and needles and things like that. That's all ray one, penetrative, piercing, pen,
mm-hmm.
pen dragon, yeah.
mm-hmm.
piercing the dragon. So, this is the interaction of ray one and ray four. So, you'll experience this in your own self, is that you had to call in your Saint George, your highest self, in order to deal with the deepest crap that you had to take on in your life. Does that make sense?
It totally.
Yeah. And so you had to evolve in order to deal with your reality. That's the lesson and that's the gift.
Yeah. I feel very honored that you did such an amazing reading on me. That was very insightful, extremely and accurate. And how did you come to be able to just look at someone in a moment and know that?
You don't even need to do that.
You just did it.
It's tuning in. It's a frequency. You know, you can just, somebody's name is their frequency. You know,
that's what I do. I do names.
Yeah.
I do names and I use a name and a birth date and it's like a key and a lock. And that's how I know the person.
Yeah.
When I do an automatic writing before a session, spirit has only got the name and the birth date.
Yeah, well, I don't even need that. You know, I just need a name and a connection. So I say to somebody, okay, tell me their name and then think about them in your heart. And of course, if somebody's thinking about somebody in their heart, they can't have a negative thought about them. And so
that's
that high spirit and I connect through to the person's monad, the high trinity first.
Right.
So to me, that, I figured this out myself, you know, I thought, how do you do this? How would I get the best signal, you know?
Yeah.
If I was working in an electrical system, how would I get the best signal? Do I go to my, little mains adapter on my laptop? Do I go to my mains, plug, my socket on the wall? Or do I go, to my fuse box?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do I go to get the best quality juice? I go to the fuse box.
Right.
You know, that's professional attitude. So the fuse box in this case is the monad, and there is no judgment in that place.
Right.
It's all one. We're all one.
That's
so it's
right.
Okay. So, you're all good. You know, it's like everybody's,
everybody
from this perspective,
is.
You're all good. Everybody's good.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I can give you some amazing personal qualities, and then I can all, you know, but there is a downside to all the rays.
Right.
And, for instance, ray six is incredibly indulgent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that lustful indulgence. And it's a lot. I mean, God, six ray people can really indulge professionally in a hugely professional context, indulge in, you know, year-long, lifetime-long pursuits of indulgence. You know, the Caligula level. Like, yeah,
that's not really relevant to me. Maybe it was in another dimensional reality.
Yeah,
but
that's the extreme. But the sixth ray is the ray of extremes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so is also the fourth ray. And
mm-hmm.
those with the sixth ray, fourth ray, would be very kind of, there would be a daredevil aspect to them. And this is probably something in a past life. I'm seeing pirate, you know, that you would be swinging on the thing with your cutlass and you're on the rigging and all that stuff and you didn't care. You know, the real Errol Flynn
mm-hmm.
Kind of energy.
Definitely a past life.
Yeah.
But I am very courageous. Uh-huh. I am very courageous. If I see something and I know that it's the right way, I will go for it no matter what. So I do have that, but not too much the pirate. And but it doesn't matter. I mean, the point is it was very insightful. And what I love about this and the sharing of it is that there are so many different ways to be able to know, you know, knowing somebody by their name because it's a frequency pattern and tuning into that is just another way of reading the webs of frequency, the same with the Akashic Record. The details that come up in terms of years or times, it's all there. It's just tuning and focusing and allowing that we're all interconnected. And so I think whatever the method, I know when I gave up astrology and I was learning how could I help people spiritually, that was my quest. I found that I was a good astrologer, but people were very interested. Okay, when's Saturn leaving and when is Mercury get out of retrograde? And, you know, when's this going to happen and when's that going to happen? And I couldn't seem to find the way to inspire them to know what was possible within them in the midst of influences. And I went through a period where I tried a lot of different things. At one point, I saw faces as colored maps. And every one of the colors was a new insight into who they were, where they came from. I mean, it was just interesting. And I knew there was just so many ways, hand analysis, numerology, and so many of them have insights. But to me, the key is, does it take you to knowing who you are? Does it take you to a sense that you are more than that story, more than that personality, more than that preference of how you're seen or what your talents are? Is there a place within you that says, I've completed that? Because I really feel in some ways I've reinvented myself two or three times in this life. And that's part of the fun of life. And I think that's important when you're drawn to a particular way of blueprinting and understanding another person. In the end, does it take them to, they can be anything. And all they have to do is really choose and go for it.
Layers, you know, part of what you were, when you were saying, I got the sense of a being that was very kind of soft and flexible, but that got covered in like mud and plaster. And, you know, just one dot at a time, one pixel at a time, we get covered, and eventually all those bits join up, and we're completely frozen in this place of being inflexible, you know.
Right.
And that's what we have to break through, and it's
we're
essentially like an I think there's probably part insect in us. On a etheric level is that we may grow in the way that insects grow, which is that they cast off an hardened outer shell.
Or a serpent that sheds its skin.
Exactly. Yeah. So, exactly. So we've got, you know, that's part of our, genetic makeup from all those different races that we've got all these different pieces. That have, and you know, it's really interesting. We have this, the parallel. My whole life has been a series of bang, oh, rebuild, bang, oh, rebuild, bang, oh, rebuild, et cetera. Because there are layers that come off all the time. And every time it's like, oh wow. Oh wow. Mm-hmm. Oh really? Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. And that, mm-hmm. brothers and sisters, is what an initiation is.
Yes. And it also is how you get wisdom. You know, that grain of sand that eventually becomes the pearl. But it sure causes a lot of irritation before it gets to that lustrous jewel.
Yeah.
And we recognize that, I mean, I see betrayal, which is what so many have suffered from. As appearing to happen because of what someone did to you. And in fact, it did on one level. But when we say that everything that's happening is a mirror of our mind and that there really is no outside, that's such a hard concept, especially when we're living in 3D time, distance, and space, and the illusion of separation is so extraordinarily real. But as you develop your intuitive abilities, you do move into all creation and begin to recognize the connecting and the way you can morph something or change something or recreate. And this is what is most important here, really, really important, because what we do to ourselves and how we see other people is that reflection. And loving who we are, or honoring, better word, honoring who we are, has you listen and develop the presence. I mean, being present is so key. I mean, every great teacher talked about mindfulness or awareness or being aware that you're aware, because in the present moment, you have choice. I mean, one of the things that I liked in Buddhism was compassionate abiding. And compassionate abiding says, I see you are suffering and I'm with you. I am here present with you. I am responsive to you, but I am not responsible for you. And that's important, to know that we can be so present that we can be in suffering and not feel we are responsible for that suffering, but we can be present and hold our center, hold our possibilities, hold our belief that this person has resources that maybe they never knew before. And just in holding that and seeing them in that way, they can be inspired to be able to find their way through. So this gift that we have of attracting in our life our matching neurosis, you know, I say to some of my clients, I could put you in a room of 1,000 people and the one guy that's got your problem, you're going to find him. You're going to, by the end of the night, you're walking out together because that's how it works.
Yep. Gravity well. Yeah.
Yeah. The gravity well. Right. So it's recognizing, if I want change in my life, it's going to be one step at a time, and doing some small things that are really helpful. For example, behaving as if it's true, behaving as if this is who you are, behaving as if it's so true that you really don't want to tell that old and lousy story anymore. And when somebody says, oh God, how is it going? Oh, I know, that's been so hard. You go, well, I'm on it, so let's talk about something else. Or, I'm exploring all kinds of wonderful ways of changing my life right now, so tell me about you. Just not allowing yourself to replay it, because the very moment you tell that story, you got the chemistry, and with the chemistry and the story, your perception of all reality is shifting. And, you know, it's epigenetics. It's recognizing perception is of your environment is affecting your DNA and is also affecting the receptor sites in your cells. And you actually are eating chemicals that are your emotions.
Mm, totally. Totally. So that's why it's very good to, that's why it's really important to sit before you eat and do grace. You know,
absolutely.
Look, I just want to do some things, because I wasn't brought up as a Orthodox Jew. I was brought up, mm-hmm. well, my dad was Catholic for a start, so mm-hmm. he couldn't have been completely. But my mum was in a progressive movement, and the men and women sit together, and you know, mm-hmm. English translations and things like that. What I was trying to get to is, being brought up in this dense, intensely judgmental situation does something. I don't know where I was going with that. No, I totally lost that. Could you take up the thread if there was any thread? Because I completely have talked myself out of it.
Perhaps.
Yeah, that's talking myself out of it. Yes. Because that's right. It's all about coming out of the intellect and into the heart and back to where there are no words, but there are feelings and symbols and all this stuff. And that's where the entire universe lives. You know, we talk about the 15% and the 85%. This is where it is. And you access it through the heart instead of through the head.
Yes. The head is wondrous. It's fantastic. I mean, my goodness, we have the ability to have a computer data bank, which is off the charts, but it was never meant to be the leader. The heart is the leader. The way of the heart, the feeling, the wholeness, that's the leader. The mind will supply what you need to accomplish, what you focus upon. I mean, the spirit looks out through the frontal lobe, you know? It says, what are you focused on? I mean, my definition of God is God says, I am consciousness and energy. Make of me what you will. This is my gift to you. And I see that is for everyone. If we are focused on the pain and the feeling that no one understands us or no one listens to us or we're dismissed or not of value, and that's what we're seeing all the time, and every time we look around, it seems to be another version of that, then we know we have to give our spirit a new view. And sometimes it's fake it till you get it. Sometimes it's just behaving in a way that you didn't come from that environment where it was so conflicting. You came from an environment that you knew you could shed that and recreate yourself. Part of the fun of working with the entertainment industry as an astrologer was they had no problem with rehearsal. If I told them they had to keep rehearsing a particular way of being, they went, okay, because they knew that's how you got to do a good part. You had to rehearse until you became it. And the same thing with athletes. If you have a great athlete, he knows he has to practice every single day in order for him to get a whole new neural net. So we have some concept, if we figured out the moment of how something feels, we should just know it. It doesn't work like that. We are programmed. And so to get to the part where we don't go on automatic, where we learn the mindfulness of presence, where we learn to make a choice every moment of how we want to proceed. And then, of course, when we don't do that, we go, wow, that's okay. I fell into my humanity. I think I'm just going to brush myself off and take the cookie crumbs off my face and go again. The gift is for us to know that it's not about being perfect. That's a killer, because there's no such thing. Life's organic and constantly changing. And if you're not making any mistakes or never getting lost, you're really not going anywhere. Got to figure it out. But to do that with the joy of knowing that the adventure is not who you are, it's what you're doing, to realize that you're so much greater. I mean, my parents were great. I was never abused. Like some people were, they did their best. They were ignorant in some ways. And as an empath and a sensitive, it was difficult for me. But if I hadn't come from that, I wouldn't have had a chance to own a lot of issues with religion and God and how I was supposed to be, and the feeling of disconnect between my heart and me. So I'm grateful I had to start there. And knowing I'm a creation and not seeing my value imbued in the creation, but as a gift of understanding and potential wisdom from it, it's a whole other game. It's a different game board.
So, where I was trying to get to earlier was that, it's a very slippery thought. You were saying that you didn't feel that it was abusive in any way.
Well, I only meant in contrast to others.
Indeed. It never feels that way. But I'm, you know, I've had to deal recently with something that brought me into a place of such betrayal and anger and violent rage and feelings of revenge. And do you know what it was?
No.
I was circumcised.
Oh, I saw your article. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's really changed my life because it happens at a place you have no words. Mm-hmm. And I think it's what causes people to completely lose their mind because everything's fine. And then suddenly something very, very wrong happens.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it doesn't stop. You know, the mm-hmm. feeling of not having something there on your most sensitive part just doesn't stop. It just stays forever. And that does something to you. Because it's so early that there are no stories for it.
So I have a couple questions for you, just to understand. Is it because you were so powerless when this took place and that it was in the name of God?
Well, no. I was shocked because, you know, the person that I was trusting that everything was, you know, so far everything would have been fine. And then suddenly I'm allowed by this person who I really trusted to be put through this trauma. And, they did it willingly. And so that caused a great dilemma in me, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm dependent on these. And so I went to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That was my response to it is like a large part of me went to sleep and now I'm waking it up.
Right.
And I think it's really because it may not have happened to you, but it happened to all the men around you in your group.
It happened to the men around me and it's happened to many women. Many women have been circumcised. I wasn't, but many women have gone through that.
Not as a
ceremony of Judaism, mm-hmm. but as a ceremony in Africa, as a ceremony in Muslim faith, for many, religious people.
Yeah, because it's insane. All right. Yeah. It's insane. We all agree. It's insane, yet still people say, oh, well, it's a tradition. Well, if a tradition is insane, you just stop it. That's sensible, isn't it?
And yes, well, the whole reason
it was here.
Yes, exactly. That is why we're here, to say enough. The purpose, supposedly, when it was done initially, was for health reasons. At this point, that is not the case. It is a tradition, and what that represents is archaic at this point.
Barbaric. I'm just from the chat room here. So Craig is saying it's traumatic, like what the elite do to children to mind control them and Muslims.
That's right.
And, you know, there is such darkness in these practices because it creates a group of traumatized and therefore, well, like I said, I went to sleep. So I was just like a robot.
Right.
I had very little feeling. I was numbed to the whole thing.
But how great for you that your anger and your enough and your response is letting you know that you're not without feeling.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, the feeling, to express is now greater than the feeling to repress.
Well, that's excellent.
And that's the way.
It's excellent. And perhaps your voice is one of the voices that could make this change.
Yeah.
And on the deepest possible level, that this part of you that you thought was dead and gone because it was taken from you, you've just shown yourself that's not true.
Mm-hmm. So
that's very important.
Here's the issue for me is that from the outside, it just seems like a little nick, you know, a little bit of skin. Oh, we do it for religious reasons. There are all these little rationalizations that are utter, utter bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
We are traumatizing our babies so they're easier to mind control. That's the better way of saying it.
Hmm.
You know, let's just lay this shit out on the table. Excuse mm-hmm. my French, as mm-hmm. my mother used to say. It's mm-hmm. it's barbaric and it really more than needs to stop. We need to stop the mindset that allows it to happen in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
And
because
the
it
way...
creates a sense of betrayal and lack
yes.
of safety. And that
yes.
lack of safety creates insecurity. The insecurity then makes people want to protect things and craziness and war.
And it also drives you to know that you're not your body. It drives you to know that there is a part of you that is beyond that, because your experience locked you in through the betrayal and the pain of that betrayal to believe that you had lost the feeling, the trust, the ability to interact, to love, to express your passion, however you wanted to do that. And what I'm saying is, in the horror of what you feel your experience was and how that has affected you in your life, you are waking up to know that there is a part of you that was not harmed. And you are not your body, and that this is purposeful for you because this is something with your format and your ability to talk to the world, that you will put this out and you will explain this, and you perhaps may make a very big choice, and a very big effect. But it's important, JP, also to know that whatever has happened to your body, and terrible things have happened to people's bodies, you're not your body. And the power you have to heal through love, through creating, through righting certain wrongs that sit with you in pain and suffering and saying enough, not anymore. It's kind of like me feeling it's so important for women to know they can include themselves and not sacrifice themselves for love. That the concepts of betrayal of what people go through because it was supposed to be different, and then you find out it wasn't, and ignorance reigned supreme and pain came from it. You are a consciousness that has no border, no boundary. And you can take this experience and you can help a lot of people if you choose, or you can just heal yourself. Or both.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like I say, those little plastered over bodies of solidification, that's the body identification. And it's not so easy to break down, particularly, I'm going to bring it up, folks, particularly if you're full of candida. Because I believe that candida actually holds the form, that it holds the energy of our inherited miasm.
You are not your body. Mm-hmm. You are not your body. And you can heal the candida, and you can know that this trauma happened for a purpose, and I don't know the exact purpose. I hear the one you're giving me, and I accept that. It may have been for other things as well, but it's not who you are. It is your creation, and it is for the healing of that creation that you have this opportunity. Your soul shines. I mean, you have a lot written in the book of your soul. And this is very important. And the candida is something you can heal. And it's uncomfortable and it is difficult. It is something you can heal. But the greatest thing is not the healing of the candida, and it is not the making the scar disappear or even growing back a foreskin. That's not it. Is knowing that's not who you are and learning from the way your body had to go through certain things in order to come to the work you're to do. and the gift you are giving by bringing this out and letting other people come forward and saying, wow, I had that experience. You know, when I was born, remember, it was a long time ago, and the way at the time was that you do not pick a baby up unless she is wet or hungry. So I was a very sensitive child, an infant, and I would cry for hours and hours, and they would not come to pick me up. And it was many, many years later that I realized that the terror I had in this life was that no one would be there, that I would cry in need and no one would be there. Now, I get that my parents really thought they were doing the right thing because the doctor told them you'll have a spoiled child and if you want a trainer, train her right from the beginning. They did not mean harm, but it set me on a path of tremendous mistrust and feeling that I wasn't worthy enough and having to prove myself all the time or whatever the issues were for me that I went through to come to who I am now. So I see this place, but I feel this rage is much more than the circumcision. It is triggered by the circumcision. The feeling of the lack of honor and nobility and of what you have seen, what you felt, because you're a sensitive yourself, and not having a place to easily put this. And then I think in this life, this trigger was a place that you could locate that seemed to just typify how you often felt in many other areas of your life. But it was all to take you to freedom, if you choose.
Linda, we're right out of time.
Aha!
Hasn't it whacked by? It's been a great journey. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And quite amazing that you would share such a powerful story.
Well,
so thank you for the opportunity.
It's been quite personal today, and I don't mind. It's fine. Because we're all here to be examples.
We're
not here to just lead and direct. That's not the way.
Yes.
The way is to take it on, do it yourself, show everybody how it's done, and then quietly recover. So with that, thank you very much, Linda McCallum. We'll hear more of you in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, David.